You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Hey, Quinn, thank you for waiting for me. My nephews literally just got on the elevator and left. And it was
so sweet.
A madhouse. But I got to tell you.
Pandemonium.
Absolute pandemonium. But I got to tell you, it was so much fun. I did just pee before we started. And I got to tell you, I think my butt got wet because I don't think they're great about aiming right now. I trusted the process, but I think they were like traveling
Foolish.
And distracted. And that was a stupid mistake for me. So I think
rookie mistake.
It's a rookie mistake. Listen, you got three nephews. You got two boys. You know the situation. There's like sometimes pee is going to be on the seat. It's a pee seat.
Who hasn't had?
Who hasn't had
pee on their on their upper thighs?
Frankly,
I mean, haven't we all?
Have we been to a gas station? Have you ever had that on your back upper thighs? It's really unpleasant. And the thing is you just have to.
If you know the person, it feels a little better.
It feels
if
a
it's
little
a kid,
better.
It feels a little
it feels
better.
A little better.
I don't know.
But like, here's the thing. I know there are people, and I think they will remain nameless. They know who they are, and again, they're going to thank me for not saying their name. But I know someone who does not, who squats on probably 99% of toilets. The only toilets they, I'm not even going to, it's, we know it's a woman. The only toilets she does not squat on.
I would love it if it was
a man.
A guy. You were like, it's really weird.
It's really
he doesn't
weird.
Know he can just stand.
He
He's
stand.
Always just doing a squat.
So she literally, like, I had her at a hotel of mine once, and, you know, all of a sudden, it was revealed to me that she squats on hotel toilets, like in a room that you've paid for, squats.
That they've just cleaned.
Wild. Absolutely. To me, that is psychotic.
Can we talk about hotel trends, which is to say, I'm going to Phoenix this weekend. I'm not staying at a hotel. I'm staying at an Airbnb, but some of my friends are flying the night before and staying at a hotel, and they sent me the hotel because when I land, I'll go meet them there because we can't check in yet. And I was looking at the hotel and I was like, it's like a couple and a friend that are staying there. It's Jamila and it's the boys. And I was like, hold up. And it's one of those rooms where it's like there's a bath in the middle of the room.
Wait, and they're all
Have
staying there
me?
Together?
Yeah. And I was like, are you guys going to bathe in front of each other? This is so romantic. And I just like, I don't like that. I
don't
like a hotel that's like, no. Not at all.
Of course.
Like, I mean, think that that's, I don't understand why anyone would like that.
So a bathtub in the middle of the floor. Okay. All right. Let's.
Like, imagine this. Imagine that there's really pretty curtains pulled off to the side like this. Like, what do you call them? Bustard. I don't think bustard's a word, but that's
bustard.
What I want to say. They're bustarded
there's
off to the side.
Bustard.
And then there's a bath and a sink in the room as though it's part of the room. And then you would like. Let the curtains unbuster to cover your bath moment.
Bustled
but I'm like,
curtain, are you thinking?
Why
of?
Can't we just? Yeah. No, we're going with bustard.
Okay. Yes, my favorite
why
buster.
Why can't we just go
curtains.
With, why can't we do a door? I'm just, why can't we do a door? Why, it, like, imagine like Matt,
Quinn,
even if it's just
do you know
Matt
how complicated
and I, he's watching TV.
Are. Do you know how
But I have to bathe in the room.
Like, at least the shitter's not in the room. They did quarter off the toilet, right?
They must. I certainly hope so. I haven't looked. I
Basically,
now I sort of hope they
haven't.
Are hotels
just prisons where you have to poop in front of each other? Point, and the hotels are like, screw
oh,
you.
Oh, that's what it is.
You're not here with
it's
a lava?
A prison. Oh, come on in. You can get it. Matt left his computer in here. Oh, you did. It's a prison-themed hotel.
Hi.
Are you on my computer right now, Quinn?
No, they still...
Yes, I think your mom is onto something. I'm so sorry. I'm so busy.
I'm just
going to
keep.
Hey, kick it down the line.
No, they haven't asked since the first ask. I think it's the kind of thing where like They asked and then they checked it off their to-do list. And it's going to be another while before they're like, oh, I checked that off but didn't complete it.
Can I just say, that's a win for us. That's a win for you. I will take it. So
winner, winner.
I
got to
tell
dinner.
You, and we're going to talk more later, but my nephews were here for a week, and I got to tell you, it just makes my heart so happy. It makes I feel so sad that they're gone. They just left. And my one nephew, Tommy, and I got really close. He and I are really close buddies. We're really good friends, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if my sister listens to this, but I'm just going to say it. One time he was like, you're my favorite aunt. And I was like, shh, you can't say it.
And then you were like, but say it again.
But
don't say it loudly.
There was a moment I was talking about how I lost my gold bracelet. You know, mm-hmm. my beloved gold bracelet. I think I've told you I lost it. Mm-hmm. And it makes me really, really, really sad. And I got a little emotional about it. And he grabbed my face and he put his face next to mine. And he goes, I'll help you look for it, Aunt Carrie. He just grabbed my little
so
face.
Cute.
He's a sweet, sweet. I love them. I'm sad to leave them. And then he was like, yesterday he was like, I'm going to miss you so much tomorrow. And I was like, I'm going to miss you too. And so today we were talking.
Did you guys do eggs?
Oh, of course. We did a lot of egg hunts. There was actually it was no drama. But okay, my question for you is, speaking of Easter, do you do Easter baskets for your kids?
No, but I do an egg hunt.
Okay. So did you have Easter baskets growing up?
Yes.
You did. Did the Easter bunny hide your basket?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So this is interesting because my sister-in-law has never hid a basket. And my mom, mm-hmm. my dad, me, obviously growing up, the Easter bunny always hid our baskets. By the way, I know that the Easter bunny, but in case any children are listening to Truly Darkly Creepily, I'm just going to go under the roof.
Then stop. Get out of here. What are you doing here? Please leave. Where's your ID?
It's so good. I'm just going to, so everybody's on the same page. I know the Easter bunny. I'm not going to say it in case there are children listening. Could you imagine?
Gosh, she won't say it.
Could you imagine? That's no. So good. Preserve the magic.
That's how they find out.
That's how they find out.
Listening to a true crime podcast.
And then
we're the ones at fault in that case.
And then we talk about murder and it's like, oh no, the Easter bunny isn't real is the most traumatized things the kids hear that. Stupid. Anyway, so we were having conversations of where to hide them here. And they're at the age 4 and 5 where when you start doing new traditions, you have to maintain them because they're remembering, you know? When they're stupid idiot 3 and under, you can do whatever the fuck you want because they're idiot babies.
Yep.
They're not going to remember.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, they're remembering. So there was some conflict where, my whole family is we hide the baskets. And then, you know, my sister-in-law was like, we don't. And it's what do we do? What do we do? And I got to say, unfortunately, she did lose and the baskets were hidden. And that was that. That was that. It feels like.
How did the children feel about their baskets being hidden when they had not previously been hidden?
Well, they didn't really know. And I think Tommy had heard about it hiding. So before he went to bed, he was like, but they're going to hide my basket. And then the night before, Jack lost a tooth. So the tooth fairy came, then the Easter bunny.
It was
like a
house.
Really busy. By the way, do you do tooth fairy?
Yeah.
How much? What's the going rate for a tooth in your house?
$2. I know it's a lot, but Koa doesn't have any money, and all his friends seem to. So he's lost 2 teeth. He has $4 to his name. His other friends are always like, "Oh, I have $36." I'm like, "What the fuck? Do you have a job? Why do you have $36? And people, I ask the parents because I'm like, what's going on? And they're like, oh, he gets money for his birthday. I think a lot of kids just have aunts, uncles, and the other that give them a 20 or something on their birthday. And Koa doesn't have that.
No kid wants
life.
That. No kid actually wants that. They'll want it later.
Well,
they do want it later.
So I'm like, yeah, you don't have any money, man. And he's like, can we go to the 99 cent store? I'm like, sure, you have $4. And he's like, oh, you really can't get anything with that. And I'm like, I know. You should save your money. But I gave him $5. It's interesting because I gave him $5 to go to the Scholastic Book Fair. And he's like, I decided to save it. I'm not going to buy a book. And I was like, okay. So he now has, he's
$9.
Crafty. Money doesn't come by often.
You know,
so he's like, now he has
that's
$9.
Not bad. I got to say, that's not bad. I don't think that's a bad lesson.
No, it's fine.
I think, like,
I don't care. He has a bank. He needs to put something in it.
Also,
for goodness sake,
he knows the library is free. He's no chump. He's like, listen, why the hell would I go buy a book when I can just get a book, read it, return it, get another book forever and ever and ever and ever and ever?
Yeah, he's thrifty. So,
like
we're learning.
Like son, like mother. You're a thrifty lady, too.
And father.
And father.
Matt's the king of thrift.
You guys are, listen, these kids are going to be thrifty as hell. How was your Easter, though, otherwise?
Yeah, it's a good way to be. So cute. Unreal. I mean, we had a big Easter egg hunt in the yard with all the neighbors. It was like maybe 15 adults and 12 kids or something.
That's awesome.
It was solid. And it was like kids from, I think the youngest kid there was like one and the oldest kid was like nine. So we did like a tiered, hunt where like there were some colored eggs that were off limits for the older kids. Like if you were over the age of five, you do not pick up a yellow or pink egg. And those were like not really hidden very well.
Yeah.
They were just kind of on the ground. And then we also just tiered the allowing you in. So like Matt brought all the kids to the front in front of the gate and he did balloon animals for them while they were waiting.
God.
And then me and some of the other grown-ups hid the eggs. And then we were like, okay, all the babies come in, all the two-year-olds come in, all the three-year-olds come in. And I made deviled eggs. Oh, this was crazy. I made deviled eggs and I made like a really nice Costco spread.
Yeah.
You know, like samosa mac and cheese ball, like garbage food spread. And then I made the New York Times carrot cake because I had to have like a carrot cake redemption.
Wait. You did not do the same fucking carrot cake recipe.
No, a different one. The one I wanted to
do
all
along. And I bet it was fucking delicious.
It was way easier and it was perfect. And I made cupcakes with brown buttercream cheese frosting, and then no one ate them. In a way where I made 24 cupcakes and 7 got eaten. So I had like 30 cupcakes. I'm not doing the math right, I don't think, but I had like 30 cupcakes.
Quinn.
More than 30. And I was like, what am I going to do with
Quinn,
30 cupcakes?
You gotta stop.
Why didn't anyone eat my cupcakes?
You gotta stop making carrot cake, man. You gotta.
I tried them because I was like, is there something wrong with them? I think that kids saw them and were like, I recognize that that's not a cupcake. That's a health food. And I think grown-ups are assholes.
The carrot cake saga continues for Quinn. Quinn can't catch a damn carrot cake break.
I gave Griff like 3 cupcakes yesterday.
Like,
he was like, can I have another? And I was like, sure.
The
you're the only one that likes them. I actually had a couple myself. I mean, everyone has to just eat carrot cakes.
Quinn, if
now.
I was there, you know, you should do a carrot cake pop.
I know you'd do your part.
I would pull my weight.
I should
do a
what?
Carrot cake pop. Mash them up. Get them a little pop. Make a popsicle.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm not going to do carrot cake for a while. It's
I think
like
you,
been suggested by the heavens
I
that I'm
done.
Not destined
I think
for.
I think you're done.
It's over.
I have to tell you, earlier this week, I haven't had this happen to me in a long ass time. I had such a fucking bad burn. Aloe. I got absolutely fucking wrecked. It's because I went to the beach.
Really?
And I was like everybody's aunt. And everybody was like, I want to go swimming. I want to build sandcastles. And my ass was like, sure, 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 sure. Yes, 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 yes. Because got to get that time in. And my body paid the price. I have a tan line that is, let me see if I can show you.
Oh, yeah. I see that. That's bad. That's very bad.
It's really bad. Well, what are you going to do?
Serious.
By the way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creepily.
I'm Quinn.
And I'm
Posner.
Carrie Ippema. And we have some Patreons to thank.
Yeah, let's do a couple before we get into it. How about we thank...
Thank you.
Oh, this is interesting. How about Molly E?
Thank you, Molly Ecstasy. Your friendship means so much to me. Is your last name Ecstasy? I don't know if that's true. Molly, you're cool. Come into Patreon and hanging out with us all week
with
long.
You. We're all rolling together because it's a double drug kind of day. Hey, hey, hey.
Molly E, you mean so much to me. Molly E is your last name. Ecstasy. Ecstasy.
Oh, wow. Somebody wrote in that they were named Elizabeth. And if I didn't write a last name, my thought is that they must be Elizabeth like Prince or Madonna. They're just Elizabeth.
It's Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth.
It's Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
Don't add anything else to the name. It's Elizabeth.
It's Elizabeth.
It's Elizabeth. That is completely her claim
it's
to
Elizabeth.
Fame. She is just
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth. Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
Let's do one more. Let's do Dave Law.
What?
Oh, I said his whole name.
I think you have to.
But I think I wanted think to because I was to. Like, Law.
I know we like, don't say like, but it's I think so we good. Have to make an exception because like that can't, that is it spelled L-A-W?
On occasion, we have
is it spelled
to
L-A-W?
Tell you the whole name.
Yes. Are we getting followed by a law firm? David Law is a cheap ploy to get some free advertising. David Law. For all your law needs,
Dave
it's David
Law.
Law.
Are you attorney at law? Dave Law, following the letter of the law. We didn't say the letter of your last name. We were following the word
because
of the law.
Because it's a free advertisement for David Law, who is the city's best electrician.
Zoologist. Thanks, Dave. We're
Dave Law, your friendly neighborhood zoologist. You know, I found out recently, like, do you know what Posner means? Like, do you know what, like, your people came over and, like, what they did to get the name Posner?
I think it has to do with carrot cake, but I'm not positive. What's I pee my pants
I pee my pants
stand for?
I think it means, like, coolest ever in Dutch.
Oh,
I think it's, like,
sure.
Son of man. Nice. Or it's, like, Ipama is, like,
son of man. That sucks. Sorry.
Son of mom.
Who goes first today?
Well, it is, hold on, it's an odd one, even though we're on the even, like, so it's an odd, so it's your first. So you should do your long one.
Okay, I will right now. This is the story of Carrie Baker.
What?
Yes.
Wait, have we done
it's
this story
K-A-R-I.
Before?
It's K-A-R-I.
I hope not.
Not
either. Well, they'll let us know if we do. Okay.
I looked on the episode list. I Googled her name and it didn't
maybe
come
I just
up.
Looked,
so
maybe I just know
it,
her of her because I want to research her, but I just haven't yet. You know that feeling where you just like have an ongoing list?
Stop me if you've heard it.
I won't.
Carrie Baker, spelled K-A-R-I, not the way you spell it. I got my information from a lot of places, but I will say that two of them were especially helpful, as we used to say on Crime of a Lifetime. Especially helpful. There was a website that is TDCAA.
Stop. TDCAA? Truly Darkly Creepily AA?
Uh-huh. Yeah. But it was basically the attorneys that ended up working on this case.
Oh, attorneys at law.
Were writing about their experience in the trial and stuff. Crawford Long, the assistant DA for McLennan County, and Susan Schaefer, the assistant DA in McLennan County. Also, a Texas Monthly by none other
Skip Hollinsworth?
Than Skip.
Ugh, we love him. Always. We love him.
We love a Skip. Skip, if you're out there.
Huge fans over here at TDC. Not double A.
So we're in April 8th, 2006. And at just around midnight, 911 gets a call from Matt Baker. He is a minister at the local church, which is in a town called Hewitt. It's just south of Waco. And he has called 911 and he says, I just found my wife unconscious in our room. And the dispatcher's like, well, did you try CPR? Try that. We're going to send people. And they show up. They cannot revive her. She has died at the scene.
Oh, my God.
Just to give you a little background, they're religious. I mean, I just said he's a minister. Please pay attention. He grew up.
They're really religious, which is really surprising because he is a minister.
It's shocking. He grew up and he has one biological sister, but his parents would take in a bunch of foster kids all the time. He would live with like up to 8 kids in the house. A lot of these kids had been abused or neglected. And he says that it really made him understand love and what Jesus can do, this kind of thing. He was baptized when he was 6 years old and he would do church choir. He would do church trips, youth groups, all those things. Very active. And after his sophomore year of high school, He's like, I'm going to become a minister, yo. And he goes to Baylor University in Waco and meets Carrie there. And they get married just 3 months after meeting because, as we all know, when you're religious, you cannot do it until you go through it. So they were like, let's get this done.
Can I just say, and I don't want to have a spoiler, but I'm just going to put some money on the table right now. And I think Matt might be responsible for her murder. And I could be wrong, but let's just
Carrie,
move.
You never know.
But I just, I'm going to.
You never know till it comes out of my mouth.
But I just want to say, like, I want the let the record show my money's on him. Okay, moving on.
Okay. Placing bets at this time. If you're listening with somebody, now's the time to lay down your chips. We'll pause for chips.
Great.
Okay, so after college, Matt becomes a Baptist pastor. Mm-hmm. And they end up having some kids. Carrie's working at an elementary school. She's teaching third grade. She's also, like, leading church children's stuff. In 1998, their eldest daughter, I believe, Cassidy, gets diagnosed as having a brain tumor. And a year after being diagnosed, she dies.
Oh, my God.
It is so unbelievably traumatic, obviously, goes without saying. But Carrie is beyond devastated to lose her kid. She goes into counseling, but every year that you know, it's been now, it's 2006, so it's been 7 years since her daughter died that she then dies. But every year since her daughter dies, around that time of year especially, she goes into an extremely deep depression. And they believe that this was a suicide based on that depression because it seems to have been an overdose of sleeping pills and she had left a typed suicide note. And the suicide note referenced her daughter and said, I want to give Cassidy a hug. I need to feel her again. So she has two daughters that she leaves behind. Kenzie, who's 9, Grace, who is 6. And 2 days after she dies, they have the funeral and everybody's there. She was really beloved in her community. It is a standing room only situation. And people are like, ooh, Matt, you've got these two kids. You've been left by your wife. She's dead. It's very sad. Are you okay? What's going on? And he's like, God has not abandoned me. He will give me the strength to carry on. And even less than a week after she dies, he's like preaching and he will bring it up and say that she made a triumphal entry into heaven. Death could not control her.
Okay.
So, okay, great, Matt. We're glad you're doing well. Or are we, as Carrie might say? I mean, Carrie. Not Carrie Baker. Carrie
well,
is dead.
Carrie Baker might say the same thing. Say that. We don't know.
She might be rolling over in her grave. Let's find out. Only weeks go by and rumors start circulating. People are hearing that Carrie's biological family, her sisters, her mom, have hired an investigator, which is not something you would typically do in a suicide. Now, what we know happened is that Carrie's sister's mom and some of her friends got together and started talking after this, and rumors are flying. Not rumors and innuendo, but even like firsthand, secondhand knowledge of things. One of Carrie's sisters says to Linda, Carrie's mom, just so you know, there was a teenager that went to go see Cassidy, must have been friends with her, when she was in the hospital with the brain tumor before she died. This is back in 98. And this teenager ended up saying that Matt had pulled her aside and been weird and inappropriate with her, trying to touch her leg and be like, do you want to go into this room with me? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the mom's like, what? That's crazy. And then have you seen the show Bad Sisters?
No.
Oh, it's so good. Okay. If you have seen that, picture them, because I just picture like all the sisters getting together and being like, wait, this guy sucked. And them all figuring it out together in this moment. And like, who knows if they'd already talked shit, but they're like, have you heard weird shit about Matt? And it's like, yeah, I have. I wasn't going to say anything, obviously, because our sister was married to him. But yeah, what have you heard? And it feels like
gossip saves lives. Can I just say, gossip saves fucking lives? That's why men hate gossip.
Yeah.
Is because women gossip to save one another. I'm just going to put that right there.
The best. So one of Carrie's friends is like, actually, he tried to touch my teenage daughter.
Oh,
so
hell.
I do know that he is pretty weird. And they're like, yeah, there was no autopsy. This is feeling bad. So these women are going to look into it, and they were going to become known as the Charlie's Angels of Waco, because they're like, we're fucking badass and we're going to figure this out, and we're going to uncover things that are going to lead the police to no longer believe that Carrie committed suicide. The first thing they do is they start trying to figure out what Matt did that day, like retrace all his steps. But they go pretty balls to the wall. They're digging through the guy's trash. They're showing up at his house being like, hey, have you seen this bracelet that your wife used to wear? And then when he goes to look, they're like searching the house.
Get it.
They're trying to do everything. Meanwhile, Linda, the mom, is like, hold up. I have, it's a long story about like a family plan, but she has their phone records. So she looks into it and she's like, okay, Matt made a lot of calls to this number. And it's this guy, Larry Bowles, who's the minister of music at this church. But were they good friends? I didn't know they were good friends. It's a lot of phone calls. Hold up. His daughter lives at home. She's 24, single mom, living at home.
A single mom, Vanessa. Who works two jobs, who loves her kids and never stops?
I think she might work no jobs. Oh, but
then it's no Reba.
If she does work a job, the job might be Matt Baker. So she's like, ooh, have you guys, do you know anything about this? And somebody's like, I've seen some shiesty behavior between them. Like, I've seen some, like, touching, some that made me uncomfortable. Yeah. And Linda's like, maybe Matt killed my daughter because he wanted to be with this 24-year-old. Or maybe he killed her because she knew that he was doing weird stuff. Who knows?
Linda, I'm on your
bottom team. Line is, this guy had a secret life. And he was, the more they dig, the more they find. And there's, well, they hire this investigator who's really the one that finds out that Matt had this whole history of sexually harassing women and teenagers. And it gets so dense that the things that come to light, there was a local mom that started a blog, like a blog. What was it called? Don't Even Get Started. .blogspot.com. Great name. No notes. And it was all about the case. So everyone's kind of being, everyone in town is starting to know as this unfolds because rumors are flying. What we find out is that in December of 1991, there was a female trainer for a football team, Baylor, and she went to go clean out a locker room, and Matt was there, and he's like, I'll help you. And then he starts harassing her, and then he tries to kiss her. He tries to attack her. She bites him, tries to escape. It gets very, it's not a mixed signals thing is all I'll say. Like, she was really trying to escape him and he molested her. And then when he went to leave, he said, I got what I wanted, and left her in the locker room.
Ugh.
His version is that he was in the locker room with a bunch of people and that she just came screaming and ran out of the locker room. And he goes, maybe she was scared of the dark. The vice president brings him in and is like, don't worry.
We believe you.
She has falsely accused someone before. We believe you. This is not a big deal. And we're not going to do anything about it. So she drops out of school and moves away. And Matt just gets to keep going to school and, like, getting accolades and being given really good internships. And he starts to run the summer youth camp. In 94, 3 years after this, he running this youth camp, Carrie works at the youth camp as a lifeguard, and that is how they meet.
What a fucking pig.
Remember, they got married right away. And just shortly after Carrie and Matt got married, the recreation minister at First Baptist, where Matt belongs, gets a report that Matt had grabbed, there was a female janitor there that was cleaning. She's like my age. And he grabbed her and was like, I want to have sex with a mature woman.
Which, pass.
Fuck
pass.
You.
Pass. Absolutely. Like, no. Next.
Absolutely. Fuck you. But around this time that he gets word of this, this pastor also gets another report that there was like a teenage girl that he made sexually suggestive comments to. And again, Matt's just like, absolutely not. These are misunderstandings. And the pastor does nothing about it. And he's like, well, if it wasn't true, I didn't want to be the guy that was like wrecking his career.
Fuck you. That makes me laugh, because if I don't, I'll scream. It is like the amount of protections this guy had. Like, of course he's going to continue this behavior, because there's been no repercussions. Sure. And it's all men who are protecting him. Again, like I said, gossip saves lives. Oh, I'm so mad. So, I'm so mad.
To avoid, okay, so basically with the church, we all know that they don't want to get in trouble for stuff. They don't want lawsuits. They don't want the name of the clergy to be besmirched. So, yeah, too late, guys, by the way. So a lot of them don't say anything and are just passing the buck, as we saw with, you know, all these underage boys that were getting touched by people, and they were just getting rehired and sent to a different parish.
Listen, not, it's,
that's
it's
what
like,
happens with Matt.
Unfortunately, with these, what is it I want to say? These organizations, these religious organizations, they're just, nobody wants to be the person to do, to make the decision.
Nobody wants to do anything. So they just, I mean, he does, what does end up happening is he does get fired from one of his jobs, which is at the YMCA working for their youth program, because they get four different statements from young women that are like, this guy is bad. He's coming after me. They don't press charges, but what they do is they get him out.
It reminds me a little bit of like when we talk about Angel of Death, the guy, the nurse in New Jersey. It was like they were such a shortage of nurses that none of these hospitals wanted to convict because they didn't want a malpractice lawsuit, right? It's like they all just like kept moving him and he kept murdering.
Sure. I also think that it depends on how believable the person is, which is to say, like, Skip Hollandsworth meets Matt and, like, talks to him about a lot of these allegations. And he's just, like, somebody that can keep a really cool head and give a very convincing performance. So I think that matters. So when people would come to him and be like, this, he was, like, a really inspirational pastor and did a really good job and seemed like a family man and would be, like, so, like, taken aback and be like, absolutely not, like, the situation was either always that the woman had like a troubled past and so was doing this for that reason, or that it was like, oh, no. That was a misunderstanding. I didn't proposition her for sex. I told her not to talk about sex in the workplace. Like
it's
something
so
benign.
You know, that these perpetrators, these serial perpetrators are picking women that won't be believed as well. Right. They're like picking women, too, that are maybe come from a troubled past
and
or they know how to pick their
not
victims.
Only that, but he, yes, and they know how to pick their wives because he picked somebody that he could kind of bully, which is to say, Carrie is drinking the Kool-Aid, and she would like be like, no, to a point where in 1997, one of their neighbors who has a teenager comes to them, to Matt and Carrie, and is like, hey, my teenager says that you were trying to kiss her and that you were like asking her if she'd ever been kissed and you like went after her. And Matt's like, no, I didn't. And Carrie's like, this little girl obviously just wants attention. So
sad.
A year after this happens, now we're in 1998 and we've got Cassidy's death. They want to leave where they've been living. It's too many sad memories. So Matt accepts a job when they move as a chaplain at the Waco Center for Youth, which is so great because he gets to work for emotionally disturbed adolescents, which I think at this point we can all agree is the job for him, right? Holy guacamole. Carrie does end up telling her friend that she and him are fighting and that one of their fights sounds so horrible. Basically, when Cassidy was really sick, Matt said that he was praying to God to get rid of her cancer. And Carrie says she was praying just that Cassidy wouldn't have to bear any more pain, even if it meant that she went to heaven. And he was in these fights being like, if my prayer had been answered instead of yours, like basically it's your fault. You prayed for something and now she's dead. And it just seems like the darkest thing you could say to a grieving mother on earth. But she was like, that's so weird. He's talking to me like that. Something has changed.
Yeah.
Like this is a marked change in our relationship. He also never wants to have sex with me. I think he might be having an affair. So she was telling her friends these kinds of things and she went to go see a therapist. And in therapy, she was like, I think my husband's having an affair. And then she's like, oh, and I found this weird bottle of pills in his suitcase. It kind of creeped me out because I think he would maybe kill me. And the therapist was like, what? And she was like, JK. Like, she, like, didn't push, but she, like, did say that.
Okay.
So, the last day that Carrie's alive, she goes to She goes to Kenzie's swim practice at the YMCA. The whole family's together. They come home, and it is that night that she dies. Now, according to Matt, what happened is that they got home from the YMCA and she wasn't feeling well. She went to the bathroom. She threw up. She then got in bed and drank a couple of fuzzy navel wine coolers, which I know when I'm feeling sick and throwing up, I mean, some people do ginger ale. I always do just a couple of wine coolers.
I love a Boone's Farm just when like, I'm feeling under the weather.
When I'm feeling a little under the weather.
What?
So then she's like, will you go rent When a Man Loves a Woman? You know, the movie that we watched on our first date. I'm feeling so romantic now that I barfed and had two wine coolers that I would love to like sex it up. I don't really know what she's thinking. He goes to a gas station, rents the movie, comes home after midnight, bedroom's locked, Jimmy's it open, finds her, the rest is history. Now, after hearing all the cases that Linda hears, the mom, about him being super inappropriate, she's like pressuring them to launch a criminal investigation because having this private investigator is great. She's found out a ton, but they're at a crossroads. And it starts to become common knowledge that now that she's come forward with all this, they're looking into Matt, and Matt's computer disappears. But it was his work computer, and the work computer network still has
we
like
got
records
the cloud.
Of what he
we
did
have a
on
fucking
it,
cloud.
Even though Matt, we have the cloud, you fool.
And thank so, God he's a fool. Thank God he's a
somebody on Matt's computer. Somebody searched overdose by sleeping pill. Ooh. Somebody searched Ambien. Somebody checked out on one of those secure carts where you can buy meds and have them shipped, but they're like not a record of what you bought. When asked about this, he's like, oh, well, I Googled that because Carrie had been taking enough sleeping pills that I was freaked out. Maybe she was going to overdose. So I was looking into that. I was worried about her.
You didn't take them away? You didn't?
And I didn't buy anything like that online. I actually got like a sexy thing, like a sex pill that I just didn't want people to know about.
Oh, Viagra.
Remember they didn't do an autopsy?
Jesus Christ. Yes, I do.
So now they're like, I think we need to do an autopsy. So they do. And hold up. If the cause of death was that she OD'd, then the drugs would have worked their way, not just through the muscle tissue, but all the way into her digestive tract, and they're not in her stomach. They didn't make it. So that's not how she died, because she stopped living before they got there. What this is more likely is being smothered, even though it is true that all these pills are in her system. So then, and this was like some crazy shit that I found out from those assistant DAs, wrote about how they subpoena Vanessa. Remember the 24-year-old that he had all the phone calls with? They subpoena her to the grand jury, and they're like, hey, did Matt ever tell you anything about Carrie's death? And she's like, well, he did tell me that he killed her.
What?
What the?
Hey, Vanessa? Where the fuck were you? She thought she was going to be in love with him.
Here's the truth. She knew a ton of stuff. Like, they started this affair. First, she's going to deny the sex stuff, and then she comes out and is like, actually, we totally were having an affair for a long time before Carrie died. And he was telling me, don't worry, I'm going to get rid of her. I'm going to be with you. I want her gone. I could, like, fuck with her brakes. I could hire someone to do, like, a drive-by. There's all these ways I could kill her. I could hang her and pretend that she hung herself.
Oh, my God. The confidence with which somebody is talking to you. Don't you feel like if you're dating someone – and they're married.
I'm like, Vanessa, you're not scared of this person? Like, I just don't understand the, like, well, this is romantic.
I don't
get. He's going to murder the mother of his children to be with me. That's so hot. Like, what is wrong with people?
Oh, God. A lot. There's a lot wrong with people, I would say.
He tells her exactly what happened after the fact. He's like, this is how I killed her.
I mean, spoiler, does she get charged with accessory after the fact?
No. I think she's the one that puts Matt away.
Yeah, she probably has to, like, negotiate to testify, because otherwise, like, she knows.
She testified again.
She should, but, like, Jesus.
It was her testimony that basically put him away.
Yeah, a little too little too late. You could have saved the family money and time by just coming forward earlier.
Oh, completely. I mean, it's very wild. So what ends up happening is that 2 weeks before Carrie died, Matt tried to kill her. He put a bunch of drugs in a milkshake, but she was like, this tastes like shit. And he was like, haha, I'll make you a better one next time. And they do have evidence outside of Vanessa, because maybe that makes it hearsay that she said that. But then they found an email where he's like, I'll make you a better drink next time or something. Like, basically, they found emails that corroborate Vanessa's version of events. On the day that she really was killed, Vanessa and her parents went to the house because they knew the family. Like I said, the dudes were like church people together, her dad. They go over, and as they're leaving, Matt follows them out and winks at Vanessa. Like, that's so gross. So he took a sexual stimulant, like, capsule that he had ordered. He emptied it. He put Ambien in it, and he gave a bunch to Carrie. She thought she was taking a sex pill, that they were taking, like,
Viagra, fun, like, yeah,
whatever, for women, that they were going to, like, take these sexy stimulant pills and, like, whatever, rekindle. They go to the bedroom. He handcuffs her to the bed, starts to do, like, sexy foreplay. She passes out, and she's still alive. She's snoring. So he gives her a kiss on the head, and he says, give Cassidy a hug from me, and then puts a pillow over her face. She starts to come to and is fighting him. She's handcuffed, so there's not much she can do. And he's just holding it on her, and then he's like, okay, she's dead. He told Vanessa that he took the pillow off her face and that her eyes opened and she breathed air. And he's like, oops, and did it again. And then makes sure she's dead. Takes her handcuffs off.
How does she not have ligature marks suicide from note. Like fighting against the handcuffs?
It's a great question. That's a great question. Yeah, I didn't read anything about that, so she must have not. But after he writes her suicide note, he takes her hand and, like, puts it all over the paper.
Oh,
so it
God,
looks
that's
like
so fucking
it's
gross.
Hers. Leaves these empty sleeping pills next to the bed, goes out and goes to the gas station and rents that movie so that he has an alibi about, like, leaving the house and coming back and finding her. The jury took 7 hours. They only had to do one vote. This guy is guilty, and he gets 65 years. The trainer that I told you about at the very beginning that he attacked in the gym was like, oh my God, if I hadn't faltered under pressure of Baylor of the school being like, shh, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. That's a false accusation. I let them scare me and make me leave. I felt small and I left. But if I had fought back and tried to get him arrested and pressed charges, maybe Carrie would be alive, which is so sad.
The fact that she's
because
taking any
Carrie
sort
would
of
be alive if Matt didn't kill her. And there's only one person.
And of course, it's the women who came forward who felt like they were bullied out of it that are going to come and think they could have saved her. When in reality, it's the men that made them feel small and let this guy get away with crime after crime, after assault after assault, after inappropriate comment after inappropriate comment that killed her. If any of the guys should have, like, these women, of course all the women are going to go, if I had just done X, Y, and Z, maybe she would be alive. Because, oh, God.
That's what women do.
It's so fucking infuriating.
And, like, a lot of the people that stopped going to the church were like, I feel violated.
Oh, my God.
That I was in this place practicing my religion and thinking of this man as a holy man. And I was duped. And it fucked with people in a way where, like, a lot of people stopped going to church altogether. It wasn't like, oh, I need to find another parish or whatever, pastor. They were just like,
yeah,
oh, my. Like, it fucked with people's beliefs. I'm just saying, like, of course Carrie is the victim, and of course
the
ripple effect
is so great, especially
was
because
quite large.
When someone is being held up as a leader in a community, and I don't know if this makes sense, but it's like, it's almost like we've talked about benevolent sexism so many times, where it's like a crime against, you know, the initial crime, the crime of murder or whatever it is, the crime they commit, but it's also like, by being a pastor, you've committed another crime, right? The crime has been compounded, just like benevolent sexism. It's like people, like, why women get bigger sentences, right? It's like, because they're mad. They're because you broke the law, you committed a crime, but also the crime against the morals or our perception of what women are, right? And I think with a pastor, mm-hmm. it's not totally dissimilar. It's like the crime is you murdered your wife, but also you claim to be a holy man. You claimed to be a leader of the community. And so it's like twofold.
And you used your position to like gain trust with children and vulnerable populations and then go after them. I mean, he was the devil incarnate.
I hate him. By the way, though,
I did want to say that.
No, please go ahead.
I was going to say, I just wanted to end on this note because, first of all, like Linda and her sisters and her friends were amazing that they fought for this and that they knew that something was fishy and that they took it upon themselves to push. And I also wanted to say that obviously, you know, that I, as an atheist, have like very complicated ideas about Christianity in general, and especially about Christianity that is that preaches anything that is non-inclusive.
Exclusionary.
Yeah. And one She Lights Up a Room anecdote that I wanted to provide was that a year after she died, a man came forward who was gay and spoke to Linda, her mother, and said, I just wanted you to know that I was really struggling with being a homosexual and I went to Carrie as a religious woman in my community and a leader, and I asked her about that and what to do, and she just gave me a hug instantly and said, God will always love you, always. And he said that she sort of saved his life.
Oh, Carrie.
So I did just want to give you guys that.
Thank you. I want to just say, it's not the right time, but I was right. It was him.
You were right. I didn't bet against you because I knew how it would end. But
I was right.
If you and your friends were putting down chips, you know that the pastor always did.
Why? It's so fucked. And now?
It's so fucked.
A word from our sponsors.
A word from our sponsor.
Yeah. Okay. I got this information from All That's Interesting, Fox 43, Lancaster Online, and Penn Live. So we all know this is going to take place in Pennsylvania. I want to introduce you to a little girl named Claire Miller. And she's a little girl because she's born in 2007. I don't know what generation she is, but let me tell you, she's a lot younger than both of us. She's born to a family of three. So she's one of four in her family. There's a mom, there's a dad. She has an older sister who's a couple years older than her, who is wheelchair bound. She is disabled and she was born with cerebral palsy. And so she needs a lot of assistance. She needs a lot of help. And I think as a younger sister would do, as a family who has someone who needs more care than others, I think everybody sort of rallies and helps her sister. Her sister's name is Helen. Her sister's like 5 years older than her. The two of them go to a private school, so it seems like they've come from like a middle class background, and it's 2021. So we know that a lot of kids got really into TikTok, right? Like, I still have yet to join TikTok because it scares the shit out of me, but she's 14 years old in 2021 and she's doing her thing. She's doing the lip syncing thing. You know, she's doing like funny videos with her dad, Claire is. And she gains like a pretty decent following, I would say, for a 14-year-old, which is she has 22,000 followers, which again, like,
that seems like
Seems like way more than what I've ever had.
I'm like, are you stressed?
What's going on? Yeah. You're 14 and have 22,000 people following you. I just can't imagine that's good for your brain in a lot of ways. Her TikTok name is Spirits and Such Consulting. And she would have like videos of her dad. Her dad was like always joking and nice and fun. And she would reenact popular anime memes. Just so you know, the page is taken down, so you cannot look at this page. But some people had said that on it, there was like a bloody glove and like a plush giraffe covered in blood. So I don't know when that happened or if that happened, but the Daily Mail has reported that video was up there. At school, like as much as she had 22,000 followers, it doesn't seem like the kids at school really cared. I think they were more indifferent. I don't think she was, there was no notice in there that she was like bullied in school in person. Mm-hmm. But she did seem to be unhappy caring for her sister because On February 22nd, 2021, she snaps. It is 1 o'clock in the morning, and 14-year-old Claire wakes up while her parents are sleeping, and she goes to her sister's room, and she stabs her 7 times with a kitchen knife.
What?
A 14-year-old. This is around 1 o'clock. At 1:08, Claire herself calls the police. She phones them up, and she says, "I killed my sister." The police arrive 5 minutes later, and Claire is standing outside. She is wearing a t-shirt with a cat face on it. She is wearing pajama pants, and she is covered in blood. They see the snow, which is on the ground next to her house, has blood on it, which they assume she, like, tried to clean her hand after that. The police arrive. She says, "I stabbed my sister." The police walk into the house with, like, their SWAT, with all this stuff happening. It is then that her parents begin to wake up. The parents had no idea this happened. They find out when the police find out. They walk into the room. There is a pillow over Helen's face. They lift it up. She has clearly been stabbed. She has lost a lot of blood. So a police officer on the scene does try to resuscitate Helen, but it's too late. She is already gone. She is pronounced dead at around 4 o'clock in the morning. The police chief would say, "I don't know that I have ever been a part of something that is quite as sad as this." Because her parents wake up, their one daughter is dead, and their other daughter is taken away, having murdered their daughter. They do not know how long she's planned to kill her sister. The police initially are questioning if she had some family trauma that would lead to something like this, but it's very clear that that's not the case. As soon as word gets out that this little girl, this 14-year-old, has murdered her sister, her TikTok following increases by 11,000. Her last post has millions of views, and TikTok has since removed her account entirely. Claire was obviously arrested, and in Pennsylvania, murder is not considered a juvenile offense, so they are going to try her as an adult.
Her team,
the defense team, has to petition to get her prosecuted in juvenile court, but it is denied by the judge. In part of this, obviously, they take account of her mental health, of her mental state at this time. Claire testifies that she is being treated for depression and an unidentified psychotic disorder, and that she was on medication. They rule her mentally ill, but not disabled. During her defense, she says that she believed that she was stabbing a hallucination of a woman, a version of herself, that told her she was ugly and a failure. She's saying that night that she didn't plan to kill her sister, that she had an hallucination, and that...
So she's going to plead insanity.
She's essentially pleading insanity.
That's going to be...
Yes. However, again, she's not disabled. She's mentally ill, and the court says that doesn't excuse the behavior. So she pleads on March 10th, 2023, at 16 years old, she ends up pleading guilty but mentally ill to third-degree murder and will spend anywhere between 12 and a half to 40 years in prison. And under this law, guilty but mentally ill means that as a result of mental disease or defect, she lacks substantial capacity to appreciate the wrongfulness of the conduct or to conform her conduct to the requirements of the law. So it's this, like, interesting loophole. And like I said, when the Daily Mail reported on it, they think that she had posted this, like, bloody latex glove and this bloody giraffe. Again, I cannot substantiate that because people have reposted it, and you never know what's true, what's not. From what I read, it wasn't like nothing I said in terms of the order of events that night had said that she had murdered her sister and then taken photos or posted anything. It was like she murdered her sister and called the police on herself very quickly thereafter. The Commonwealth, a.k.a. Pennsylvania, has says that they do not dispute that she suffered from a mental health event at the time of the offense, but legally, it does not excuse the conduct. The sentence imposed holds her accountable for the crime committed, but balances the nature of this offense, her young age, her mental condition at the time, and the protection of society. So at this point, while she is in jail, it is up to the Department of Corrections to control her treatment, her mental illness, and hope that she is only granted parole when it is confirmed that she is no longer a danger to herself or society. A noteworthy aspect of this case is just the plight of the parents of these two girls. In one night, they had both of their children taken away. And at trial, the defense and prosecution both commented on the challenge of trying this case in the court of law. Because on one hand, the victim's parents want justice. And on the other hand, the accused or the guilty person is also their child. And it's like this heartbreaking trial where they are sitting in support of both the victim and the accused. And it's like, what is justice there, right? How do we serve justice and also do it in the way that is the most productive for all the parties, because all the parties are related? So that's the story of Claire Miller I had to tell you. But the headlines were very much like TikTok star murders sister. What makes it even more complex is that her sister was disabled and could not fight back, right? Like she was a wheelchair-bound person. And it's like a horrible tragedy. And but what got me interested in telling this story was the news being like TikTok star murders sister. And I think it's more complex than that. It's not as cut and dry as that headline might tell you. It's just a heartbreaking story of a young girl. Of two young girls who, I don't know how to say that. It's just a heartbreaking story.
Yeah. Oh, terrible.
Yeah.
Well, where do we go from here?
I think some Jack Candy, John Candy.
Oh, sure. I can do a Jack Candy for you. I feel like, this really merits a departure. Let me find
a little bit of a break.
All right. Let's see. Some of these are so good, but it's like, which is the right one? Oh, well, I'm taking my kids to Disneyland this month, so I'll read this one because it's in theme. One thing kids like is to be tricked. For instance, I was going to take my little nephew to Disneyland, but instead I drove him to an old burned-down warehouse. Oh, no, I said. Disneyland burned down. He cried and cried, but I think deep down he thought it was a pretty good joke. I started to drive over to the real Disneyland, but it was getting pretty late.
I really like that. I really like that.
How about, he does a lot about his wife, Martha. And I like this one about her. Martha says the interesting thing about fly fishing is that it's two lives connected by a thin strand. Come on, Martha, grow up.
I like that. I like, see, you just need a little John Candy, what's his name?
Jack Handy.
Wait, his name is Jack Handy? Wait. I thought his name was Jack Candy.
No, Jack Handy.
That is so confusing. I fucked that up. Yes. I think I've looked up. I'm like, who the fuck is this Jack?
I've never noticed that you say it wrong.
That's so funny. How many of you write in? How many of you thought it was Jack Candy and not Jack Handy? That's crazy.
Raise your hand.
We'll wait.
Okay. Well, ooh, that, here's a good one for that. Because Jack Handy has a good quote to match with any notion. And here's one that I will match to that. To me, truth is not some vague, foggy notion. Truth is real. And at the same time, unreal. Fiction and fact and everything in between. Plus some things I can't remember, all rolled into one big thing. This is truth to me.
And on that note, we're going to leave you. We'll see you next week. We love you.
Goodbye.